Savage, bro.
Promotion.
That's all that matters. We need to change from a soccer ecosystem that runs like North Korea or China towards one that is meritocratic.
North Korea.
We're in soccer North Korea here in the United States. That's what we have.
Dang, dude. I think that line right there should just be the opening of this podcast, dude.
Great. I'll make that the teaser. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today's discussion is all about a concept known as losing your man. Otherwise, in the recreational soccer circles here in America, the infamous get open. Like, nah, we're not talking about get open. It's losing your man and how to do it, how to train it, how vital and critical it is, not only to development, but at the professional level as well. Parents, you need to be on the lookout for this if you're evaluating the training of your child, whether it be in the team environment or a personal training environment. Coaches, come on, let's get on board and start training this stuff. It's vital and it will definitely catapult your team to a different level, especially if you're players are not technically as proficient as you would like them to be. Losing your man affords them more space and more time. And so even if that ball kind of pops up on them and their first touch isn't all that great, now they've got the added time to control it and then keep possession and progress the ball. Speaking of which, you can learn all about losing your man at 343coaching.com. We've got free and premium programs for you there. Obviously, on this podcast episode, we're going to be verbally talking about it. But then again, you need the visuals. You need the actual activities, the actual exercises, and be able to witness what I consider a master practitioner training the players in this activity so that then you can take it to your environment. Parents, you want to be able to discern whether your child is on a proper path or not. And for that, you can go to 343masterclass.com. That is where we have codified our decades worth of experience at every single level here in the American soccer environment. Boys, girls, U9 through U19, up to and including the professional levels. And when I speak about the youth game, we've seen it all at every single level. We've been at the very pinnacle of the youth level, and we've also cut our teeth at lower levels than the absolute pinnacle. So all of that information, we've consolidated, we've made lessons, we've made modules, and you can find them at 343masterclass.com. Finally, if you are coaching the little ones in the 7-versus-7 format, coaches, you can go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, here we go. Join me and Benny as we discuss losing your man. Let's get right on into it. We've got 30 minutes before Arsenal PSG, but I don't know. Let's just take a crack at whatever topic you've got.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, I definitely wanted to touch on topic of losing your man, because I know we brought it up in the last podcast, but we weren't able to get to it. And I also want to continue to build off of, and this is in response to a comment, just to dig a little bit deeper into the throw-ins and the importance of rehearsing them and just patterns of rehearsal. But if we don't have time, then, you know, we could save that for a whole nother episode, Gary.
Yeah, let's do throw-ins later.
Okay, sounds good. Just to start, I know I often, like, when we start a topic, I often ask you, like, hey, Gary, you know, what's the importance of losing your man? I'm not going to ask you that because I think it's pretty obvious in football and soccer. Obviously, you want to create space for yourself, have more time on the ball when you receive it, and especially when you get to the highest of levels. If you're not creating space for yourself, you're going to be in trouble. If you could, though, Gary, can you maybe break down, you know, what you mean by losing your man within the context of the 343 possession-based methodology? And, you know, how does it differ from the traditional, like, recreational approach of oftentimes you hear a coach on the sideline just screaming to the kids, like, you know, get open, or, you know, get your feet on the line, something like that. So I think it's a much more complex topic than people realize. So maybe you can break down, you know, what it is that it means within the context of the possession-based system. Does that make sense?
I think so. I think we've touched on this in prior episodes, but it's worth repeating some things. First, the distinction between get open and what we call losing your man, it comes down to training. Whenever you hear maybe a coach saying, get open, that's a clear indication that there's been no training done on how to get open. And so when we say losing your man, we actually train it. We simulate the game environment where a particular player in a particular position is being marked. And that can mean different things at different levels, Ben. So being marked, it could be the guys right next to you, literally like touching you, as in a set piece in a corner or something like that. And then you rehearse the set piece such that you might even include screens, you know, like in basketball, like your teammates are screening the guy that's marking you, and then you lose your man that way. But we're more talking about in the fluidity of the game itself. So the classic case, the most often viewed case, the case that you can see in every pro game more clearly than all the others, in my opinion, is the case of a winger losing their outside back marker. Yesterday, Barcelona played Inter. And as I'm sure you noticed, because you're in tune with these sorts of things, you see Lamine Yamal in every single possession of Barcelona constantly trying to lose his man. And sometimes the pass gets given to him, and sometimes the pass does not get given to him, but the guy is doing the motion. And so one such motion is pretend like you're going to make a run behind the defensive line, and then don't actually make that run. Just posture like you are, maybe take a step or two towards doing that. The defender bites and also starts backpedaling or backtracking. Oh, shit, he's making a run in behind me. And then you turn back and go the other way, you know, towards your own defensive area. So you create a spatial separation, which is the whole point, yes, is creating spatial separation such that if one, so that your teammate can see that you are now, quote unquote, open and decides to give you the ball. And then two, when you actually receive the ball, you have a good amount of time now that you did not have before if the guy's right next to you. So that's one movement. The other movement is the exact opposite. You make a motion like you're going to check to the ball, meaning running towards the guy with the ball, and the defender bites and gets really tight with you, or wants to get tight with you. And then you go the other way. Yeah, you make a run in behind the defense. And so what ends up happening, of course, is that if the defender bites, their momentum, you know, prevents them from, you know, stopping, then turning, then right. And once they realize, oh crap, the run is the other way. And so that little split second there gives you a running head start so that if the ball is played in behind, you know, you have a running head start to beat the guy, the defender. So those are the two classic examples that everybody in the audience can easily see a pro game and focus in on the winger off the ball. And they're constantly doing these sorts of things. And a huge part of the rehearsal, of course, is the player in possession has to have been trained in conjunction with the guy losing their man to for them to have that nonverbal communication, right? And you see maybe Lamine Yamal or your player who's 12 years old making the first movement, and you already can see it. Oh, he's actually not going to run in behind. He's actually just losing his man. So you can actually pass the ball to where your teammate is going to be before he actually, you know, turns around and goes back to where he wants to be. So that also affords you an extra microsecond or second or 2 seconds. Or if you're playing recreational, I mean, you have all the time in the world. It might buy you an extra 3 seconds before the defender gets back to you. So it's crucial at every age level. It's crucial at every level of play to learn these things because it improves your capacity for retaining possession, which is critical in football.
100%, Gary. A lot to unpack there. First of all, though, Lamine Yamal, dude, he was fingertip away from everybody in the world saying, like, hey, this kid is the best kid in the world. You know, another phenomenal game. Obviously, because he didn't score, people are going to say, you know, Lamine sucks, Barca sucks. But, dude, the fucking Inter goalie went off yesterday, huh? If it was on a good one.
Yep.
Yeah.
On two occasions, Lamine almost wrapped it up, right? One when he toe-poked it.
Yeah.
And the other one when he hit the post. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, dude. It was insane. But no, Gary, I'm glad you brought up the point of the player that's actually on the ball. has to actually recognize when his teammate is losing his man, because that's a massive mistake that you see at the younger levels. Even if a team is trying to incorporate losing their man, let's say, for example, like you said, the winger checks away and he really wants the ball at his feet. Maybe like this, the 10 is on the ball and he sees the winger making a run in behind. So he's like, all right, I'm going to play this ball. But actually the winger was just wanting to, you know, get the ball at feet. So if you don't train and rehearse this, it's virtually, you know, impossible for your players to be able to implement it on the field. In terms of training, Gary, how often do you think this should be trained, or do you think this concept should be kind of incorporated into every single activity that you're doing? Obviously, you know, it's not going to be the main focus of every single session that you do over the years, but, you know, are you constantly reminding the players in the session if they're not doing it?
Yeah, constantly. So there are activities where the sole focus is losing your man. Sole focus. Like the entire activity is just like one big triangle with two or three guys in each corner of the triangle. And they're all, you know, there's a ball in motion. They're all constantly doing this sort of thing. But then obviously you incorporate this into every activity. Even if you're building out of the back, you know, and you're simulating maybe advancing it from your back line to your midfield, or advancing it from your back line to your wingers. Your midfielders and your wingers, they better be doing the losing your man motion before the back line feeds them, right? So when you're training building out of the back, you are absolutely incorporating losing your man. When you're doing attacking patterns, and you know this, there's countless attacking patterns that you can rehearse. You know, there's the basic ones, maybe like three very basic fundamental ones, and then there's more advanced ones. But in every single instance of execution of that activity, you have your players losing their man, whether they get it or they don't get it. And if you catch the player cheating, you know how youth players are, right? If you have them run maybe suicides or something like this, they don't actually go all the way to the cone before they turn around, right? They cheat. They cheat with like a foot or 6 inches or 3 inches or whatever the heck it is. If you see your players cheating and not doing the proper movement of losing your man, you need to call it out, and they need to do it and do it correctly every single time. Don't just go through the motion. So yeah, man, every single activity you're doing this stuff. And even, even in some of your rondos that are large number rondos, maybe like 4v4 plus three or things of that nature, you kind of need to juke your guy because there's defenders involved in the space. So that could get a little bit more complicated if the space is very compact, right? Because I mean, how it's, that's more about ball speed and foot sensitivity and being able to execute one touch passes. That's what those rondos are for. But mostly in the build out and in the attacking phase, you're doing it.
Yeah, 100%, Gary. A really good exercise, I think, from the coaching education platform. And I believe this rondo was occurring when actually losing your man was like the entire topic of the session. And it's a 1v1 plus two. So you have four rondo boxes, you know, or there's two rondos and then two more stacked on top. It's 1v1 in each box. And then you have two neutral guys. And the two neutral guys are hopping into the box, right? And basically, once they get a certain amount of passes, maybe seven or eight, the guys in the next box have to start making their movements to lose their man. So I think that's a really good exercise, you know, in terms of thinking ahead and kind of seeing the game as it unfolds. But you brought up another good point, Gary, about the kind of the laziness or the complacency of the players actually training this skill. Because oftentimes when I've trained it with my teams, I notice exactly what you say, Gary. For example, they'll be at the cone and maybe it's just like they do one step to the right, a little body feint, and then check out. And, you know, immediately you stop it and say like, okay, if you do that in the game, is that going to do anything to lose your defender? And they're like, no, probably not. I'm like, okay, then, you know, fucking do the entire motion as if you're making a hard run in behind, sprinting, even like screaming for the ball, asking for the ball, and then you pop out quick to go and receive the ball. So if you're not constantly on them, Gary, and if they're not executing it properly, and this is with everything, I mean, you got to stop it, call it out, and make sure that they're doing it. I know that you mentioned, Gary, this is a massive concept for the wingers and also for the nine. What about for like the six, the holding mid, even the outside backs and even the center backs? I mean, I feel like there's maybe a time or two when the center back, let's say the outside back has the ball and the center back is marked by the nine. Maybe he's faking to push up forward and then immediately he drops off. Or is there instances as well for these types of defensive players? And how important?
Well, for sure. Yeah, it's more subtle, right? Obviously, if you're talking about like a center back.
Yeah.
Because of what you just said. And it also depends on whether the other team is high pressing, not high pressing, those sorts of things. But I think for the youth game, more than anything, the emphasis, like we said, is on the wingers, on the attacking phase and on the build out, and also with the six. The six is huge, and the eight and the 10, also the central midfielders, because just by default, they are surrounded and swarmed by defenders. And what's really cool in that position is that the losing your man can be even more effective than if you're on the wing, because you can dip in and out of being behind your defender or in front of your defender. Yeah. So there's no threat of offsides. There's no, you have a lot more degrees of freedom if you're the six. So for instance, if you dip in behind your defense, say your center back has the ball. Okay. Your center back wants to play you. Okay. What's a good way to maybe lose your man? If you're behind your marker, that's great, because you can like pivot left and he'll go left. And then that was the fake. And then you go right. And now the center back can just dish you the ball, right? That's if you're behind your marker. So you could go left, go right, or fake right, go left. And then there's faking forward and then going back, or faking like you're going deep into the opponent's territory and then coming back and checking so you can get the ball to foot. So you have all, you know, left, right, up and down. And it also depends on the defender. It's also cool because the defender has less visibility than the outside back marking the winger, because the defender might have to be checking his shoulder to see where the six is. And that's really easy then for you to lose him with a simple little juke. Yeah. And if you dip behind him, he has to rotate his entire body and then you come back. So it's a lot more, it's a lot easier, but at the same time, it could be difficult because you may have two guys on you. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I don't know. I guess the key point here is everybody on the team needs to be doing this activity, but the ones that are most highly impacted by it and should be doing it more religiously are 6, 8, 10, and your wingers. And then obviously your 9 is important too, if he wants to drop into that like false 9 sort of role or make a run in behind. It's tricky. I off the top of my head, because center backs,
I feel like it's just that one movement of dropping off from the 9 to receive a ball. I cannot see another time when they're
because the nine usually won't bite if the center back fakes like he's gonna advance. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's true. So no, that maybe it's more of even just like, yeah, I think you're right, dude. Just the center back dropping off, but like you're right, dude. The nine oftentimes doesn't bite if like the center mid is hopping into, I mean, the center back is pushing up the field, you know, unless you have like a center back pivot that's becoming also a six, then maybe you're going to see that.
Yes.
But, yeah.
Yes. The outside backs do have to do it, because the outside backs have the opponent winger on you and you want to build out. So you definitely have to, and the winger could bite because they know that our outside backs or Brazilian outside backs or modern outside backs want to get forward, right? So they will bite and assume their defensive responsibilities, and then the outside back can just check the ball again.
Yeah, no, it's critical in the build-up. If the outside backs aren't losing their man, then the center back is pretty screwed in terms of his options.
Yep.
I was going to – you kind of brought it up, Gary, but a player that's being man-marked, or, you know, I know we always bring up Messi, but obviously – any team that plays Messi, you know, they're going to put one guy on him or even two guys at times. So for players that are getting man-marked, you know, and maybe even getting double-teamed, I think this concept is massive for them. And even though teams, you know, do this to Messi, he still always finds a way to, like, his timing is just impeccable in terms of faking one way and then immediately getting open to another space. It's like they almost can't even like keep up with him. And it's pretty insane to watch, you know. Obviously not everybody's Messi, but
yeah, Messi, in my opinion, is a special case in the sense that because he gets man marked so often, or because he has so much attention, in my opinion, one of the ways that he shakes that off and still is very effective in the game is he walks. He walks and he's basically acting. Nobody thinks he's dumb, but it's human nature. The guy's just walking around, not really engaged in the game, you know, and he kind of like lulls you to sleep. You know, he won't even activate and get involved in plays when they're right next to him. The play is right there. His teammates are right there with the ball. And he's like, nah, I'm not going to do anything. And the team will go and attack, and he won't even go on the attack. Sometimes he'll just stay back. And so the fact that he stays back, you know, and while the team is going forward and attacking, well, the opponent goes and defends, and then it creates huge space for him, right? Because then his team will stop the attack, pivot. Oh, there's Messi. He's completely alone. You know, yes, he's further away from goal, but he's completely alone. So effectively, he loses his man by not doing anything, by just staying out of the plays.
Right. No, and just so everybody's clear, you know, obviously, like we always say, Messi's a special case. We're not advocating for your 8 or 9 year old to be walking on the field and doing nothing, right, Gary?
It is interesting though, because it is a tactic that I started being suspicious of way back when, in his Barca days, when he became notorious for not running. He just walks around on the field, and like, well, this guy just walks. It's not because he's so good necessarily. I try to think about other possibilities, and that's one other possibility that I came up with. It's like, it is a technique, a tactic to get open, is to not actually move and not engage in your team's attack.
No, dude, it's all about the change of speed, the change of rhythm. Even like, let's say you're a winger and the 10 has the ball, the 10 is driving. I mean, you can literally just be kind of chilling on the sideline, and like the left back is maybe like man marking you tight, and you're acting like you're not moving. And then all of a sudden it's like a hard run in behind. And it's kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of like the snake, like luring a guy to sleep, like really slow, slow, slow. And then the defender kind of falls asleep, and then boom, like the attacking player is sprinting in behind. So it is a good technique for sure. I mean, not on every play, but you know, it has its moments.
The other move to do to lose your man as well. And again, this is for the special players, in my opinion, or maybe somebody can be innovative and do it for non-special players. I don't know. Let's stick with the Messi topic. So if he's like playing right wing or something like that, you know, you can be a free player and not maintain your position. So drift from the right wing into the central midfield all the way to the left side. And then the defensive team now has to kind of switch off their responsibilities. And if they're not good at switching off their responsibilities and communicating and rehearsing that, then the guy becomes free, because whoever was assigned to him for the game is no longer assigned to him just by the mere fact that he moves away positionally. And this was part of Pep's like innovation, if you will, of Messi playing the false nine. Is your position is the nine. Oh, but now I'm going to drop into central midfield, and you know, the center backs have a decision to make. Do I go with him or do I not go with him? Right. And when they would not go with him, okay, well now the guy's open in a sense. And if they choose to go with him, then you've got the slashing wingers, you know, making in runs behind the center backs. And, you know, Barca would just lop it over, or play a filtered ball, and you're effed. So just another little technique is drifting away from your position, and then the other team switches off and you lose your man.
Yeah, yeah. Or, no, dude, I mean, there's so many levels to this, but, you know, maybe you don't want to lose your man, like in the sense that you just mentioned, the center back is man marking you and you want to drag him out of space to create space for your teammate to make the run in behind. So just, you know, so many layers of complexity to this that I think a lot of people don't realize.
No, it's all chess too. So for that very reason, maybe part of the game plan at a high, when you're dealing with high level stuff, part of the game plan is, hey, don't lose your man. Always, if don't fake making a run in behind, actually make the run in behind every single time. Yeah. And then your team plays you once or twice and it's not successful, or who cares, but just make that run every single time. And then, you know, one out of seven times or one out of 10 times or at the opportune moment, fake like you're making the run in behind. The defender has now been programmed. Oh, this guy's making it in the run in behind. And he 100% bites into it. So you are now 100% going to be wide open.
Yeah. And Gary, I'm not sure if within our own YouTube channel, if there's a specific video that highlights all the instances of Brian's teams losing their man. But, you know, I would encourage the audience to go and watch literally any game that has been published on 343's channel, and you're gonna see it executed at a high level. I mean, dude, Gary, I mean, we bring it up a lot. I've been coaching for 10 years. I've seen a couple teams maybe have one or two players that can execute this, but I've never seen it done to the level of what Brian's kids were doing, man. And, you know, obviously that's a credit to Brian and all the work that he put in, but it's really incredible to watch 10-year-old kids performing this, you know, complex idea.
Yeah, man. It's the only way. And the kids have to learn it. This is another instance of the whole notion of let the game be the best teacher. That's horseshit. That is not, you are not going to learn all of these things just naturally, organically on your own. And even if you come across it, you stumble upon it organically, and you're a player who plays all the time, right? And you're like, oh, this is an interesting thing. I'm going to start doing this stuff. Well, guess what? The guys who've been training it forever have such a huge advantage on you because they've learned how to do it. And secondly, organically, that telepathy that's going to happen between the kid in possession and the kid out of possession losing their man isn't going to get developed either.
Yeah.
And I'll add, because you mentioned the YouTube channel and what Brian was able to do at such an outrageous level with youth players, that's the reason that we were able to compete and challenge and dominate at times the real FC Barcelona academy teams or Ajax or, you know, La Liga academies. It's the only way to be competitive, man, is yes, you need the talent. Brian had a lot of talent, but you also have to be able to train the team appropriately, right? And have the kids develop their soccer IQs to a level where it rivals, matches, or exceeds their foreign counterparts.
No, dude, you're 100% right, kid. You know what's funny is that when I was adding Shushu's video into the last YouTube episode, it was from the game when I think they were Chivas at the time, so, but they were playing in Barcelona against Barcelona. And it was crazy to watch it because at times you see Brian's team like throwing mean-ass combinations and just amazing plays. And literally, like, Barcelona looks like cones in some of the videos, dude, because like Brian's team is just, I mean, obviously Barca is Barca and they had good moments too, but it's like, dude, you know, I'm honestly considering republishing one of those videos or something, because I think a lot of people still haven't seen that and like can't even comprehend like an American team would go and dominate on Barcelona like that. Like,
that's yeah. Amazing. And I know nowadays, because a lot of teams now, because Brian and, well, I should say Paul Walker, right, the organization, but in conjunction with Brian, kind of pioneered and spearheaded this whole thing of going overseas and competing with the legitimate European clubs and academies there and rivaling them toe-to-toe. Nowadays, it's more common. Everybody goes on these trips, dude, to these tournaments and stuff, like, and everybody sells this and everything, and they go over there, and, you know, that typical team, the average team, gets bitch slapped, obviously. But, yeah, you know, when MLS academies will go or something like that, they will compete, and sometimes they'll win. You know, when with GA Cup, I think Man United comes over here at times or something like this, and you'll see like an MLS academy actually win that game at the U15 level or whatever level it is. But and this is a big but here. If you look at how these teams play, they're just playing soccer. You know, it's a pickup game. It's not orchestrated. It's not high level like what it is that you described Brian's teams was doing against FC Barcelona. You're not seeing all this build up and combination plays and pad. You don't see any of that stuff. And you can still win just by pure athleticism and the United States has a lot of talent. I've been saying this for 20 years now. We have just as much talent, if not more talent, than the Europeans or the South Americans in number. It's just we just do a terrible job of ultimately developing them to be successful at the next levels.
Yeah, dude, everybody goes to MIC nowadays, bro.
Yeah.
Everybody. I mean, freaking signature AYSO team somehow changes their name to Elite Golden Academy and boom, they're in, bro.
Yeah. It's funny, the good old days, right? When it was just Brian's team, nothing else. It was just the Barcelona USA teams.
No. But I mean, dude, I'm not hating on teams going to Spain and playing against teams. I think it's awesome. I think it's incredible. But I think you're right, dude. I think the standard of what Brian's team showed and what it is today, I mean, it's pretty far off. I've seen very few teams, if any, you know, compete at that kind of level. Obviously, and again, there are good practitioners out there. There are people that have been implementing, you know, everything that you and Brian have preached, and they have been successful, you know, so it is possible to continue to do it. But yeah, dude, I mean, if you have the funds and the resources to make that happen for your team, I mean, even if you're not a high level team, you don't have to go to the MIC tournament. I mean, you can find any local tournament in Europe or Spain or whatever it is. And incredible opportunity for the kids to see the culture and learn and see how high the level is out there, man.
100%. And that last point, I think, is very crucial. I think it's eye-opening for a lot of families, not just the players. I think the players know quite a bit, but for the parents principally, when your team that you think is really good or very competitive, you know, here in the States, goes over there and you get to play like a legit pro academy. It could be Celta de Vigo. It could be Man City. It could be, you know, Benfica, whoever it is that you're running up against, and then get absolutely bitch slapped. It is a great learning experience to say, oh, it's like that, huh? All right. Well, now I'm calibrated, and now I realize that there's a gap and potentially how big the gap is. So now I actually can make better decisions, you know, for my kid.
Right. Yeah. Now you've been Dallas Cup. I think it's because you have teams from Mexico coming. I'm not sure if there's European teams that come in, but I think that tournament is also eye-opening for a lot of teams where they think they're at the highest level, Gary. They've won their local youth league, and it's like, all right, well, you know, we're going to come and we're going to boss this tournament and just get smacked every single game, dude. You know,
yeah, it's the best. It's the best.
Yeah, dude. I think we'll have to have a whole episode on just tournaments, dude. You know?
Yeah, it'd be cool. And tournaments get a bad rap, and for many reasons. And they're good reasons at times, right? Because people say, oh, they're just a money grab and a cash grab. And I understand that. And yes, it's capitalism at play. You know, I'm not hating the game for it. But sometimes a lot of teams need to get out of their local bubble and go to these sorts of tournaments just for the very reasons we cited. Get a little bit of a reality check. Or in some instances, maybe you're like, oh, shit, I guess we are pretty good. You know, we were able to compete at this level. So there's both sides of the coin there.
Ah, dude. And then you also have sandbaggers who their team is probably like a flight one or flight two, enter the Vegas tournament in the lowest bracket. And, you know, the parents are popping champagne in the hotel room after.
Wait, do they actually do that? Do they sandbag? They enter a lower bracket just to win it? Yeah.
Wait till you see the comments on this exact topic, dude. Everybody does it, bro. Everybody's trophy hunting and everybody's afraid of losing, and they all want to win, dude. The parents want to be able to post their kids holding a trophy at the end of the weekend, dude. To them, that's the most important thing to the parents, dude. It's crazy, bro.
Jesus Christ.
Dude.
What happens? I've never spoken to any depth or to any number of parents that we've had, you know, after the kids graduate away from youth and after the kids are no longer in soccer. I guess your parents would be an example, right? But in general, like reflecting back, but actually your parents would not be an example of this because I don't think they were trophy hunting, you know, but I would love to speak to the parents who kind of lived vicariously through their kid in that way. And they were trophy hunting and they were all, this was their life, right? Is youth soccer on the weekends and all this stuff. And then the kid ages out and maybe doesn't even play college, or maybe does play college, but eventually the kid doesn't play soccer anymore. I'd like to talk to those parents and see how they reflect upon everything.
Yeah, for sure. No, so many people want to be on the podcast, but I think it'd be cool to hear from a parent that maybe their son just finished like the whole club experience. And you're right, dude, they can reflect back on the good and the bad, and you know, how many trophies did their kid win, dude?
Yeah, but I'm just curious if they view themselves as like, oh man, I was a freaking psychopath back then. I was a sociopath. It's all a blur because I was fucking mesmerized, you know, right. that sort of thing. Or do they reflect back like, oh, it was a great time, best time of my life. You know, maybe it's both of them. It was a great time, best time of my life. I had something to look forward to on the weekends. I don't know what their psychology is now looking back.
Yeah. Well, dude, Gary, you always tell me, like, as you get older, for example, right now I'm about to be 30. I look back when I was 18 and it's like, dude, I was a complete fuck up, dude. Like, I had no idea what I was doing.
But it's bad, huh? It's bad.
Yeah, for sure, dude.
But I'm curious if the parents will be like honest about their interpretation of it. Will anybody say, dude, I was out of my mind. I look back, I'm kind of embarrassed with so many of my actions, you know, and I want to know.
Yeah, dude. No, it's like, I don't know if you ever seen this, another fucking movie, Gary, but fucking Kicking and Screaming with Will Ferrell, dude. That fool's a legend, bro. So as like, he becomes the coach of his son's team and like, he just becomes like, so obsessed with it. This fool hires Mike Ditka, the former coach of the Chicago Bears. He hires him as an assistant because that's his, basically he's going against his dad's team. As the dad cuts like the grandson from the team, and then Will Ferrell's like, all right, I'm going to coach the team. And bro, this guy just becomes like so obsessed with it. Like at the end of the game, this fool has a cone. The kids are like, from the other team are passing by, this kid's like, losers. Like, or he'll push a kid down during the game, bro. It's fucking hilarious, dude. But, you know, obviously, I don't think it gets to the level of parents pushing other kids down, but there are some parents that, I've had one game where the ref had to stop the game because the other team's parents were like yelling shit to my players. And, dude, they were like, at this time, they were like 10-year-old girls, bro. And it's like, what are we doing, guys? Like, let the kids play, bro.
Wild.
That's like the World Cup final to them, dude.
No, but I want to know these parents.
Yeah, dude.
I want to know if they'll look back and be like, yeah, I was a dick, you know, or I was a bitch, you know, because I formed a coup to oust the fucking coach, you know, like they do crazy shit, dude.
Yeah. Well, dude, if there's somebody out there that's willing to be honest and your kid is finished playing, then, you know, come on the podcast, dude. That'd be badass.
For sure. Oh, I can guarantee you that. Actually, I can't guarantee you that. I don't know. I was going to start thinking about what's happening now with all the rules and parent rules, code of conduct, you know, because I think the clubs have tried to, I don't know if crack down is the right word, but the clubs have try to kind of say, hey parents, let's chill out a little bit more. I don't know how effective it is though.
I mean, I think clubs definitely do implement that. As to how much the parents actually follow it and how much does the coach, you know, continue to reiterate the guidelines or what it is that he expects in the parents. I don't know, dude, because I think coaches find a hard balance of, you know, being strict on the kids and helping them achieve their goals, but also at the same time, like, you have to have a good rapport and a good relationship with the parents. Otherwise, like, dude, it's so easy for just a parent to get up and leave your team or quit and go try out with a different club. You have to keep the parents happy, dude. It's unfortunate that you can't just have a successful team and be doing all the right things and, you know, helping these kids develop. Because even you've mentioned, Gary, like, even though Brian's teams are at the very top of the youth levels, there were still parents that weren't happy, you know? I mean, you're never going to make every parent happy, dude. And if there's a coach 100%. Out there that is, we need to get that guy on the podcast, dude. Find his secret, bro.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I think there might be coaches out there that think all their parents are happy. but oh, yeah, it's not the case.
For sure. There's definitely a coup going on in the background for sure.
Massive coups, massive conspiracies, massive shit talking and attempts at reputational attacks, you know, with other parents who may not even be on your team. It could be parents from other teams, and they're just spreading fucking nonsense.
Yeah.
It gets nasty out there, man.
Yeah, dude, it does.
I don't know how you guys do it, dude. Honestly, it's just, oh my God.
It's cutthroat, bro. It really is. And then you have, dude, you have other coaches coming in, like secretly talking to your parents after the game in the parking lot. Bro, it's like,
you know what I'd like to talk about one of these days too, and maybe even bring a guest on who can expand on it more, or you yourself, if you have experience with this. Somebody brought up a very good point to me last week, and they're like, Gary, personal training has exploded over the years. There's a ton of personal trainers now, and the personal trainers basically have no accountability whatsoever, because unlike coaches of teams, the accountability all comes with the score line, the results. You know, the results are black and white. You lost 5-1, or my kid only did not play this game, or only got this much playing time, or you play favorites, or like there's all these angles, right? Where you get issues crop up. But the personal trainers don't have any of this accountability, none of it. They're not responsible for the kid that they're training, whether the kid's team wins or loses, or he plays or doesn't play and all this stuff. And I just heard it many a times. And last week, the stories I heard were incredible, that personal trainers are notorious, like, shit talkers on the kid's club coach. Yeah. Like, notorious. Oh, it's your club coach doesn't know what he's fucking doing. You should be playing this position, not that position, or you should be getting more playing time. It's just not right. I know that other player. You're better than that other player. You've improved so much. Or, hey, you should leave that team and go to this other team over here. And the personal trainer has relationships with other clubs or teams, and those other clubs or teams will use the personal trainer to recruit away somebody from your team. So you've got this kind of guy in the middle who's a personal trainer, zero accountability, charging $50 to $100 an hour, right? And shit talking like crazy. Is this something that you've heard of too?
Yeah, it's a fantastic point. And to the notion of no accountability, I mean, you see it all the time, Gary. If, let's say, a personal trainer's kid is playing in a game and their kid scores a goal, the parent posts on Instagram like, oh, thank you so much to our personal trainer. Like, she's come such a long way from all your, you know, all your drills and activities. And let's say, okay, the next game, the player has a shocking game. Well, then the personal trainer is going to come and say like, oh, you know, it was a mental thing. Or like you said, your coach had you in the wrong position today. So, you know, not to villainize personal trainers, because I think there are some good ones out there, but you're right, dude. There really is no accountability. They do have a lot of power, dude. But yeah, dude, $100 an hour, that sounds nice, bro.
Well, maybe we should get into the personal training business, man.
Well, dude, the guy that I sent you, Gary, that wants to record with you, that's exactly what he does, dude. He's a personal trainer. He's based in Miami. This guy has, like, across all his platforms, like 500,000 followers. So, I mean, for what that's worth, maybe you can bring up this exact topic with him, dude.
Sure, yeah.
Grande Sport Training.
No, I always want to do a little bit of research, because I feel a responsibility to the audience too. Yeah. Because as we cultivate an audience and they've come to know, like, and trust us, and even if they don't like us, they just because of what has been accomplished over the past 15, 20 years, they're like, well, if this guy kind of says something, it's something worth paying attention to, at least, even if they might not like me. And so I always want to be very careful in propping up anybody else. You know, I take great pride in being super selective.
For sure.
So that's my only reservation. But maybe just like in the intro to these podcasts, like I did with Joe from Soccer Vs, I'm like, hey, I don't really know this guy. You know, I just saw a couple of his videos. I kind of liked what I heard. And we're having a chat. But So maybe I'll just say, hey, it's not that I'm endorsing the work of any of our guests. It's just we wanted to have a conversation. Maybe that's the way to handle it. Sure.
Or maybe he, not wins you over, but maybe, you know, that some of the stuff that he says aligns with what you preach and all the things that you're doing. So I think this, he's a younger guy, probably in his like early 30s. But I think it'd be a good guest to have on, dude. And dude, I mean, this guy's just, you can tell he's passionate about football. He loves the game. And I mean, dude, like within 20 minutes of the Inter-Barca game being over, this guy already has like content of himself breaking down the game and analyzing it. So, wow. You know, he really, you could tell he cares, dude, and he loves what he does.
All right, brother, then let's do it. F it. I'm using your endorsement. I'm gonna tell Manny endorse this guy. Okay, so here we go.
Sick, bro. Hey, do you have Jurgen Klinsmann's number?
It's. But who knows if it's still his number? It was years ago, man. Let me see. Why? Why do you want to hit him up?
Yeah, dude, I want to get him on the podcast with you, dude. That would be. That would be the most probably watched episode, bro.
What's he up to? I don't even, he's just been taking, he's a hiatus. No, I don't have it on my phone.
Oh, we'll track him down, bro. We'll find him. I think that'd be an incredible episode.
Well, Kuntz from Cal State Fullerton, I think is, I don't want to say like a friend, but you know, they've gone along and have been acquaintances for a very long time. Maybe I'll just hit up Kuntz.
Now, do you think Klinsmann would, not come out and talk shit on U.S. soccer, but you wouldn't be afraid to hide the truth?
Yeah, I think, look, what ends up happening to so many of us, me included, is you say the truth, but you don't say it all and with the full fervor that it deserves, you know? So I haven't heard, Tab Ramos did an interview with, what's his name? Filippo from, Tactical Manager, who has a big audience as well. I haven't heard the episode or watched it or anything, but I just saw some quotes and with Tab kind of saying, hey man, yeah, MLS hasn't really helped the national team all that much. And it looks like we're not taking full advantage of the World Cup being here in 2026. Nobody really cares about the national team and all these sorts of things. So all of those things are true. I just don't know how he delivers those comments. If you know what I mean, because you can say facts about U.S. soccer, MLS and stuff, but deliver them in such a way that they're very political and very diplomatic. And then, so the necessary effect to stimulate change isn't there. It's just kind of like the audience will be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Oh, okay. Oh, wow. He said some things that usually aren't said in the media and stuff, but he said it so nicely that it just, okay, let's move on to something else now, versus riling up passion in the audience and getting the audience to be like, well, fuck, we need to fucking do something about this then, you know? Nah, it doesn't happen. So when you tell me about Jurgen, you know, he'll say the truth, but he'll say it in such a way that la la, and then like nobody will care. It's fine.
Yeah. In a way that he can still have a job next week if he needed.
Yeah, everybody's looking for plausible deniability. It's like you deploy your agenda, but you deploy it in such a manner that if it was ever questioned in the future, something you'd be like, well, I didn't really say that, you know, that the intent was never this. Like I just said something that is factual and I moved along with something else. There was no big agenda behind it at all.
Yeah, I think one thing's for certain, Gary, you're never getting a job within U.S. soccer.
You know, never say never, Benny. Never say never. I've seen a lot of strange things happen in the world. I mean, that's bringing politics, right? You remember Trump before he became president in 2016? You know, he was at one of those freaking, what's that? What's the freaking name of that? Not conference, convention or gala or something where it's like the press, you know.
Where Obama was like kind of making fun
of him. Yeah. Yeah, where Obama is making fun of him on stage and stuff like that and talking shit. Like one thing I do know is you'll never be president or God knows whatever. And okay. And everybody in the world would agree with Obama. Like there's, yeah, of course, this fucking guy will never be president. It's impossible, you know. Yeah, my ass.
All right, dude. Maybe one
that's
day
why,
you'll be.
Well, that's why they're flipping out too, because the impossible became possible and it breaks people's brains.
All right, guys, you heard it. Maybe one day Gary Cliven, U.S. soccer president, dude.
Yeah, that's right.
That'd be badass, dude.
Dismantle this whole fucking shit. Dismantle the mafia.
What would be your first executive action, dude?
Immediately work towards deploying promotion relegation, opening up the ecosystem. Everybody gets to participate in the ecosystem. Equal opportunity, not equality of outcome, equal opportunity. You got a club? You can start at the very bottom floor. And if you win and win and win and win, you can get to the top.
Yeah.
And if you lose, you're going down, motherfucker.
Savage, bro. Promotion.
That's all that matters. That's all that matters. We need to change from a soccer ecosystem that runs like North Korea or China towards one that is meritocratic.
North Korea.
We're in soccer North Korea here in the United States. That's what we have.
Dang, dude. I think that line right there should just be the opening of this podcast, dude.
Great. I'll make that the teaser.
All right. Next week for sure, we got to talk about throw-ins, bro.
Okay.
You know, one of our big followers, Jarhead Jr., the guy that's always commenting on our things. He put a comment. He's like, can you please, Gary and Benny, like, you know, I need more advice on throw-ins. This guy said one of his strategies to maintaining possession on throw-ins is to throw the ball at the other team, because the other team has such a bad first touch that players
that's
will
funny.
Just go and win the ball, bro. We'll have to help them out with some patterns, just simple patterns, dude. I mean, and dude, I think one thing that goes such a long way in youth soccer in terms of throw-ins is having your players just fake one way, dude. Like fake to the center back, the whole entire other team, they all step up and they're like just eyeing the ball, and then boom, you go the other way and you're out, dude. But yeah, we'll get into it in depth next
time. Well, tell, dude, Jarhead, if you got a couple bucks, man, invest in yourself and sign up for the program, dude. You get to see the whole freaking shebang right there.
Yeah, for sure.
Like what are you spending your money on? Listen, I don't want to be presumptive or anything. There's a lot of people that are struggling out there for sure. But I mean, if this is your life, if you want to do soccer, you know, we've got the solution already for you.
Yeah, for sure. Sign up for the free course too. You know, I mean,
yeah.
What better way to see what it is that you're actually offering?
Yeah. Cool. All right, Benny, anything else? Any parting remarks?
Dude, PSG Arsenal still 0-0. So you have it on in the background or what, dude?
No, I do not. No, all my focus is here.
I like it, dude. That's how much you care about the audience.
Care about you, Benny.
Thanks, bro. All right, dude. Good stuff. Friday.
Okay. Should we call it then?
Yeah. Unless you have anything else. I know you already touched. I mean, you never touched on why promotion relegation is related to losing your man, but I'm sure it's pretty similar to all your other rents.
It's the same thing. The same thing, man. Promotion relegation is the implementation of a meritocracy. So if you are training the teams and the players correctly, the probability of you moving up increases, and the probability of somebody else moving down increases, and then the cream truly rises to the top. So if a team is not doing rehearsed throw-ins and it's just like a random free-for-all, then that's just a little bit of a negative. Then that just increases your probability that you suck, and it's only a matter of time before you go down. That's all, Ben. It's so straightforward. I think I captured it properly. We live in soccer North Korea, where the powers that be elevate the biggest bootleggers, the guys who support the status quo, and the ones who are innovative or want to change things or want to do things the quote-unquote right way. I think you're either just going to be ignored, or we might actually send you to the guillotine and kill you.
What a way to end it.
Brian plays Dallas, 5 o'clock. Yeah. Are you training?
I have to record the game and watch it when I get home, but.
All right.
I think they can do it, bro. I think they can. And then what's Dallas's excuse going to be? Well, you know, we played the B team or something.
There's no way, Ben. There's just no way, dude. There's no way. We'll see. We'll see. I just feel like even if things are going well, and they're going to fucking they're going to fucking red card you. They're going to fucking give a PK to Dallas. They're just going to do shit, dude. If it looks like, oh man, really? Dallas is going to be eliminated to, we got to do, the fucking referee's going to get communication in the earbuds, okay? Bro, Benny, U.S. I don't know if you know this, U.S. Soccer Development Academy Finals. It was Brian's U18s versus New York City U18s. It was, you know, our guys against Gio Reyna and that whole crew over there in New York City.
This is the red card incident, no?
Yeah, the red card incident. So New York City FC gets a red card late in the game, and things are looking great for us. We're going to win the game, or I don't remember what the scoreline was, but New York City FC gets a red card, and then the U.S. soccer officials were up there in, I don't know, freaking like a little studio area or something like that. They call downstairs, they pause the whole game, and then they take like 10 minutes or 15 minutes or God knows how long, and they execute like a VAR sort of scenario or something. Like they're talking about it and they say that they're reviewing it. First off, there's no VAR, okay, in the academy matches, but they like do some sort of VAR thing. They're like, oh no, it's actually not a red card offense or whatever. You can get the player back on the field. What the fuck is going on, Benny? What the fuck is going on? The player got a red card and U.S. soccer stops everything and then overturns the red card.
Wow, dude.
15 minutes later.
Yeah, dude.
Unbelievable stuff.
And this is way before VAR ever came out, no?
What year was this? This was probably like 2018.
Okay. So when did VAR start coming out? Like, I feel like in 2020.
I don't know. But that's crazy, bro. There's massive corruption, I'm telling you, dude. So tonight, the red cards are going to be flying if things are not going Dallas's way, or the penalty kicks are going to come out if the things are not coming their way. And if Dallas kicks the penalty kick and the Alta FC keeper saves it or something, they're going to say, oh, no, he moved before, you know, illegal, retake the kick, like all kinds of stuff, dude.
Yeah.
Maybe Brian gets another red card.
Well, no, actually, I forgot. You just brought something to my mind right now. I don't know if you've seen the most recent audiogram that I posted of you and Joe, but it's basically...
I did.
Okay, so that one's kind of blowing up. I think it's over at 15,000 views right now. I'm curious, Gary, if, you know, do you think, I don't want to say like the top executives of U.S. soccer, but like people high up in U.S. soccer, do you think they're like constantly monitoring your stuff or like watching these YouTube videos? And I don't know, dude, have your head on a dartboard in their office or something?
Nah, not constantly monitoring, I don't think.
Because basically, dude, in that audiogram, like, you guys are fucking going up saying U.S. soccer's a mafia, like, what they're doing is wrong. And you have all these people commenting, like, couldn't agree more, and, like, 100%, you know? The system needs to change. And so, like, you know? I'm curious if they're aware.
So look, all of them have always religiously been glued to what has been written, you know, what I write, what I publish, all this sort of stuff. They're all super aware, hyper aware. Do they religiously keep tabs? Nah, probably not so much. But I'm sure it crosses their timelines, whether deliberately or not, regularly. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And guys at U.S. Soccer MLS, look, I'm not a threat. I'm just a tiny little YouTube channel. We've only got like 6,000 subscribers, so it's I can do no harm. It's fine.
There you go.
Don't mind me. I've only got like a 10,000 followers on X, and so I'm small potatoes. No need to pay attention over here.
Yeah,
I'm just a little pissant. You're good. You guys do you.
Yeah, and then in 15 years you're the president, bro. All right,
That would be funny, Benny.
That'd be insane, dude.
Oh, man. I think I would be a good president.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'd be very good, actually. I think I'd be loved like nobody's been loved before. I would win in a landslide.
Well, dude, the public doesn't even have any say in who is the executives of U.S. soccer now. Isn't it like the existing class of whatever they're called?
Yeah, so there's different parties, right? There's the Athletes Council, which is what you're referring to. There's the different pro leagues have a certain number of votes associated with it. There's the head of the adult leagues in the U.S., the youth leagues, or associations, rather, not leagues, have voting power. So there's all these different blocks that have voting power.
All right, dude, start getting the coup ready, bro.
I'm not performing a coup. If the people want me, the people shall have me. I'm here to serve.
Legend, bro. All right, dude. PSG's your score, dude. 2-0.
All right, my man. Catch you later. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.